Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Google Plus, maybe more niche than ever. One feed helps you check all your networks in one place, and stickers may not really be sticking for Path. All that and our weekly rad or fad, what will it be, up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 120, recorded Friday, July 19th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR7. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and your support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled edition of The Social Hour from TWiT World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in hot and steamy Toronto. It's like 150 degrees here. Well, not quite, but it is getting up there. And things are good. How was your week, Sarah?
It's been good, Amber. Before the show, we were talking about how I've been trying to eat right all week. And I've been pretty proud of myself. I've been doing well. But I think if I was in the heat that you were in, I'd probably just say screw it and throw in the towel and have myself some ice cream.
Yeah, it's tough. And you know what's really weird? I'm actually drinking a hot latte right now. And I don't know what's gotten into me, but it's kind of working because I'm just so warm that nothing is affecting me.
It's like, what does it matter at this point?
Yeah.
I have a thing where in the morning, because I have to have a cup of caffeine, coffee, or maybe a couple cups of tea in the morning, and I don't care how hot I am. I could be in Death Valley, dying, and I would need that first cup of caffeine to be hot. It's a psychological thing.
I totally get it. It makes a lot of sense. So, Sarah, we had a ton of fun last week. I don't think we have any surprise guests this week, so you can relax.
Well, I'm disappointed, actually. I mean, we could just have Lil Bub be a guest on every Friday, and I'd be really happy about that, although I don't think Lil Bub's dude is really down for that. It was just a one-time thing. But anybody who didn't catch our show last week, Amber and Tony Wang, who works here at TWiT with us, surprised me and put together an interview with Lil Bub, one of Internet's most adorable and famous cats, and her owner, whose identity is sort of, you know, a secret. And they joined me, and I didn't know who was going to be on the show, and it was one of the best surprises I've ever had. And I actually emailed him afterwards to just say, thank you so much. And he was nice enough to email me back, so hopefully, aww, you know, I can sort of consider him my Internet friend now. And it was extremely fun show. So, yes, good stuff. If you haven't seen the show and you don't know about Lil Bub, you have to watch it because you'll learn a lot more about how adorably cute she is.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun. Now, Sarah, I've been trying to post a lot more on Google Plus, and I know our first story talks about this particular social network. And I have to say, I continue to enjoy it more every single day. But I guess there's still a really small percentage of us sharing on that site.
Yeah, so a new report by Gigya, which is basically monitoring social network usage, says although apparently the user base of Google is growing steadily, which sounds good, that a new report says that only 2% of overall social sharing is happening on Google+. They looked at Q2 of this year, so that's from April to June of 2013. And if you look at this little pie chart here, you see Facebook's got a solid half. Twitter's second in line with 24%. Then, of course, Pinterest. That seems to be in line, Amber, with some of the other studies that we've seen lately where we're like, gosh, Pinterest is
always
really on the heels of Twitter. You got LinkedIn. you got Google Plus at a little paltry 2% in there. And then you've got sort of a big other, which could be, oh, I don't know. I mean, maybe some Quoras and some, what else? Gosh. Oh, Picnic. I don't know. I Flickr, whatever, you know, other social networks are defined as. And so, you know, if you go down a little bit in these pie charts, and you break it down into media and publishing, and you might think, okay, well, maybe overall Google Plus is just better in a certain niche area, but it stays pretty constant at 2%. In fact, nothing moves too much. Facebook, obviously, not so great for e-commerce. Pinterest is the winner there. But in general, the pie charts all seem to be divvied up roughly the same way, with Google Plus not really ever gaining. Amber, what do you think is going on here? I mean, have we not figured out how Google Plus is better than all the rest? Or is it just a matter of people getting on the social network so the numbers are growing, but then not using it?
I feel like it's just slow. I mean, I just think we're seeing slow growth with Google Plus, and I think it's slower than we would expect. I mean, I'm continuously surprised with numbers from Pinterest to see the growth is that high, and a little bit surprised in some of these charts to see how close LinkedIn and Google Plus actually are as far as sharing, because I would have assumed that people shared a lot more on LinkedIn, but it doesn't really look that way. I don't know, sir. I don't think this means that anyone needs to really change their social media strategy as far as deciding, oh, I'm only going to link and talk about different content on Pinterest because there's a big community there. It really depends where your community is. And I know for me and probably for you, Sarah, too, a lot of the people we know in the tech industry are on Google Plus. So it still is an important place to be.
Sure. It's an important place to be. However, I will not pretend to have been on Google Plus in any real capacity in months. Not because I'm trying to make a statement or anything, but yeah, I used to post regular updates to certainly the Social Hour i5 for the iPhone, which is the show I launched most recently because I was kind of, you know, trying to remind people that it was a show. And it's like I've gone back to the old standbys, which is Twitter and Facebook, just to kind of get the word out. I can still see from the clicks that even that engagement is just sort of a small little sliver of the people that it's supposed to reach. But somehow on Google Plus, it's fallen by the wayside, even though on Google Plus, it's the best place to have a discussion. And I know one of our shows here at Twit Know How is very active on its Google Plus page because Iaz and Shannon, who produces the show, and everybody who's involved, uses it as not just a tool to solicit topic ideas for, like, what do you want to know how to do? What should we build next? But sometimes how to build things. So, you know, you and I could possibly put together some sort of a Google Plus page for the Social Hour that's more of a community effort, like, how do I do this? And maybe a social network expert would be able to contribute to our page, almost like a Q&A type of a thing, and then we could bring it to the show. I think that there are, and that's just a hypothetical situation where Google Plus might really, really shine. Yeah, I think that would probably work better than on Twitter, where we're sort of all over the place, but I still wonder. Google Plus is not a new social network anymore. And with something like Pinterest kind of coming out of nowhere and becoming something that people use and is a little bit more ubiquitous with social networking, where is its growth potential?
Yeah, I think they're going to almost force people to use it. I mean, I still maintain the position, and I think I've mentioned this many times in the show before, because you end up showing up your Google Plus profile in search on Google, and those type of things are affected by your presence on Google Plus. I think it will be one of those things where you will just have to be there because Google will make it difficult not to be there. I don't know if that's the best solution when growing a social network, but let's face it, there's a ton of competition out there right now from different apps and social services. So I think they're kind of doing the only thing that they know how to do, which is really to, you know, put a little pressure on.
Yeah. And I think the whole, like, forcing people to have a Google Plus account, even if they never want to post in Google Plus, if they have signed up for other Google services, is, I don't know, some people are annoyed by it. No one's making you become active on Google Plus, but Google probably doesn't really care. Hey, we don't need to be the next Facebook. As long as we can get data on people that are using other Google services, sure, we'll have you have a dormant account on Google Plus, but if we know more about you, we can advertise to you, and that still remains Google's biggest bulk of revenue.
Yep. Definitely. Now, Sarah, you found this next story, and I have to tell you, I thought this was so neat. I love hearing about usage of social tools we mentioned on the show in other parts of the world.
Yeah, so in the country of Kuwait, if I said, what do you associate Kuwait with as far as how people make money, what would you probably say?
Oil.
Yeah, that's what I would say, too. I mean, there's a lot to learn about Kuwait, but I certainly know for a fact, I mean, wars have happened around the oil in Kuwait. So this is a really interesting story on Quartz. If you're not familiar with it, QZ.com, it's a newer publication online, and they're really great. This is a story about how crude oil contributes more to Kuwait's GDP, almost 50%, than small businesses. However, Instagram is an unlikely place for some small independent retailers to open up web stores. So enterprising Kuwaitis basically have a web store on Instagram that kind of works the same way a B2C business would work on another network, where you know, you upload a photo of something, you let people know how much it is, and there's a little bit of a, okay, if you're interested in it, then you know how to contact that person. Specifically, at least in this article, it's sheep. Well, if you're a farmer in a country and sheep are helpful to you and you're looking for maybe the best price, this might be the way to do it. Now, I would never, Amber, think of Instagram as the place to put up something that I had for sale. You can see in the sheep pictures, too. It's like there'll be pictures of sheep, and then they're obviously using some sort of a photo editing tool to add, you know, a telephone number and the Instagram account in order to get back to that person. And it's sort of hard to say, well, what happens when you really do want to contact them if for some reason you don't want to use the telephone, because it's not as if there's some sort of direct messaging service on Instagram where you can contact that person. It would kind of be public. But in general, I guess it probably speaks to the popularity of Instagram that this just happens to be the network that gets the most eyeballs for people like this.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just so interesting to see how other countries are using tools like Instagram. And I think you're exactly right. I would never think of Instagram as being really an e-commerce site, but essentially that's what it has turned into in this part of the world. And, you know, you can see from some of the images that are listed in this article that people go as far as kind of having brand messaging saying that they just want people to know they're honest sellers and you can depend on them and all of these other details. So fun to watch this happening. I'd be curious if there are any hard stats to see how many people were using Instagram, but it does seem like it's generated enough attention to get this news story written. I want to tell them about something like Shopify or something, you know, a better tool for buying, but I guess if this one's working.
Well, especially if everybody's running Instagram on, you know, Android phones and yeah, it seems it's interesting. I mean, it's using a tool in a way that I never would have thought it should be used as. Sheep underscore sell, that was the particular account that we were looking at some pictures from. That seller has 2,460 followers, so that's a pretty healthy number for an Instagram account. Apparently, interest in sheep is very strong. Ahead of a particular holiday in Kuwait, prices for a single sheep was about the equivalent of $525, $150 Kuwaiti dinar, due to some higher feed costs. So this all, you know, it's sort of a fascinating look at supply and demand and what people are interested in parts of the world and how they get the word out. So sheep sell. If you're interested, you too could follow that account, maybe if nothing more than to see some really good-looking sheep on a regular basis.
All right. Another story, and this one is about Facebook on mobile devices. We know a lot of people are already relying on accessing Facebook on their mobile phones. And based on this study, mobile users have jumped around 20% in the U.S. and the U.K. in June. So quite a few more people using Facebook on their smartphones, which is, I think, not a big surprise. I still hate the Facebook app. I have to tell you, I'm not a big fan, and I feel like they could do better. But nonetheless, a big attraction for a large user base.
Agreed. I actually uploaded a photo via the iPad Facebook app last night, Amber. It was a picture of me and a few friends that was taken the other night. And I thought, oh, this is great. This is the perfect Facebook picture. You know, I'll tag everybody and I'll upload the photo and I'll say something. And there's nothing wrong with the mobile app. I understand that for the most part, it has all the same features as the web version of Facebook. But I'm with you. I find the whole thing like, wait, no, where's my stuff? And I need to delete something. And how do I just upload a photo? And there's something about the layout inconsistency. I made up that word just now. That really bothers me. And I always end up saying, I'll go to my laptop and upload something that way. I eventually figured it out. I actually did upload the photo via my iPad. Although I did upload just a caption first without being able to attach the photo because I wasn't thinking. But that was probably just my user error rather than Facebook's error. But I don't really use Facebook Mobile either. I use Facebook Messenger via my iPhone all the time. But that bypasses the rest of Facebook altogether. I'm using a completely separate app.
Yeah, I almost wish with Facebook that they would, once you log into the app, I really just want to come to my own page, my own personal account. I mean, I know that naturally people want to see their feeds, but I find there's just too much information there, and I'm more curious maybe to see if someone's commented on something that I've put out there. So the whole experience is always jumbled for me. I feel the same way every time. Obviously, for advertisers, this could be a huge opportunity. In this article from Reuters, they talk about the possibilities for mobile advertising, saying that when people are engaged, they check their Facebook about 14 times a day. So in this article, there's a quote saying that if advertisers can figure out the right messages to put out there, there is a big opportunity to make money. Now, I haven't seen Facebook advertising really done that well or cleverly, but, someone will do it. It's going to happen.
Analog Kid in chat says, just go to m.facebook.com on your mobile browser and you don't have to worry about the app. That's an option as well. I don't find that it renders as nicely as the full web version, but that's certainly something to think about. You know, Amber, it's funny. I don't remember exactly which dating site because I've tinkered around with so many of them, but there is one. It's like either eHarmony or OkCupid that one of the questions that they ask you because they're trying to determine your personality is, how often are you on Facebook? And it's like a multiple choice answer. It's like every day or, I don't know, once in a while or never. Who uses Facebook or, something else? And it's like my answer is every day. I'm on Facebook every day. But I think the reason that they ask the question is like it's supposed to say something about the kind of person you are, right? I mean, I'm on Facebook every day, but without the context of, well, because of the industry that I work in,
yeah,
it makes it seem like I'm some sort of a weirdo who's just constantly on Facebook, talking to, the people I grew up with. So I don't know. It's interesting how people use Facebook differently. Somebody saying that they're on Facebook separately 14 different sessions in a day sounds crazy to me, but maybe I am, and I just don't think of it that way.
But you probably are, yeah. I mean, I think I probably open up the Facebook account, Facebook app. I probably open it up 8 or 10 times a day easily just to kind of glance at it, but then I close it right away. So I don't think there are any stats there as far as the duration of time people are spending, but it's one of those things that I do check regularly, and every time I check, I think, oh, there's nothing that interesting, and then I close it.
Exactly.
So, but I like to, I don't know, Facebook, I feel, it has kind of a different use for different people. For me, although I do use it a bit for work, I also find it's almost like information gathering. Maybe I'm not interacting as much, but I kind of know what my friends and family are doing who live all over the place. And I'm just kind of, I don't want to say stalking, but just kind of checking in.
Facebook is the place where I get into, it does feel like stalking. I get into these, these rabbit holes of people's profiles, and it's like, these are people that I know. I don't always know them. Sometimes they're friends of friends and their privacy settings aren't locked down enough. So I'm like, I end up sort of looking at people's pictures and it's like,
and you're like, why am I here?
And I think, well, I'm not doing anything crazy because this is open. Anybody could click the same photo link that this person who knows somebody that I know has. Yet it feels very strange. But yeah, I guess that's sort of the beauty of Facebook.
Yeah, it is. Now, Sarah, I don't know how you feel about this next story, but I know you use PATH a lot more than I do. And it looks like their numbers have gone down a little bit. However, they are still on the hunt for a lead investor into the company.
Yeah, so it looks like PATH is raising a $50 million Series C round, which, you know, in VC terms means a whole lot of money, which would put it at a $500 million post-money valuation. And of that investment group, I guess the company is still looking for a lead investor, kind of meaning the investor, single investor, but probably a conglomerate that'll pretty much lead the bulk of the money, you know, kind of leading the pack. These sort of investment rounds aren't really all that interesting to talk about in detail unless you really like talking about money. But what's interesting is that it sounds as if in the U.S. anyway, so this is actually data from Onavo Insights, that although millions of people have downloaded the app, and we've kind of touched on some of the perceived nefarious ways that PATH has bumped up their usership, you know, by spamming people's contact lists, and they've gotten in hot water for a few things over the last year or so. So the numbers of downloads seem really good, that active users are declining, at least in the U.S., so these are U.S. numbers. PATH does have, I know, it has a very vibrant community in certain countries in Asia, for example, according to CEO Dave Morin. In June, 1.9% of U.S. iPhone users actively used PATH, which is down 24% from 2.5% of users in May. So of all the iPhone users in the U.S., a very small percentage of them are using the app actively. That probably means using it once every 30 days. That's usually how active users in broad terms are defined. That's a pretty small number. But the fact that it's down 24% in a month means, it's almost like the Google Plus problem. You have all these accounts, the numbers seem really, really healthy. But if PATH is trying to make money off of us all buying sticker packs, well, I mean, they've got my money, but there aren't enough of us for it to be financially viable. They're going to have more investment money.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but think it's just going to continue to get harder and harder to get those massive audiences that we saw in the early days of MySpace and with Facebook as well, because every time I turn around, there is a new app launching. I mean, I know, Sarah, you cover a lot of these apps. A lot of them are social apps or they're e-commerce apps, some type of community apps that would really give people a reason to go to a more niche community, things that and get involved in things that they are passionate about, their interests and hobbies. And it just feels like there's everything is kind of splintering in many ways. And being able to capture those larger audiences is just going to be harder and harder all the time.
Exactly. And the closed network, there's something about, how do I even describe, this is not PATH fatigue that I'm experiencing, Amber. I almost have like PATH anxiety. For example, this weekend, there is a gathering in Utah. It's called Summit. It's part of this sort of series of entrepreneurial events that happen, I don't know, once or twice a year. A lot of my sort of friends who are in the same industry as me are going. I am not going. It's very expensive. It's sort of one of these conferences that is supposed to help you engage in, you know, new friendships and make contacts. It's like $4,000 or something for a weekend. That's too much for me. And a lot of my friends on PATH, you know, they're all excited and everybody's checking in at Salt Lake City Airport. And something about that being public on Twitter or Facebook or even Google Plus or sort of the big public social networks would not bother me as much as this whole, we have a very intimate group of people now and I'm watching a fairly large chunk of them all go have fun. Mm. It's not jealousy. It's sort of like I actually don't want to look at this because it doesn't apply to me. So I kind of have this Facebook anxiety, like I don't want to check it because what am I going to get out of that?
But that's kind of like the circle is too close to you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it feels like. Like it's, I could see that too. I mean, if I knew more people in Toronto, for example, who were using PATH and they were all, I mean, it would be just too much. It's enough to see in the Twitter stream, which is more, it's easier to ignore those people because there's so much noise, but it is almost like too close, right? It's like, It's yeah, too close.
Which creates a whole different dynamic. It's some, when it's great, it's great. You know, I share a photo and everybody laughs and, oh, that's so funny, and winky faces all around. But it doesn't always work, especially, yeah, because it is supposed to be close-knit, and there is a bit of an artificial, you know, kumbaya, everybody hold hands in a circle type thing, because that's not really the way that life patterns actually play out. I don't know. I think about this stuff all the time.
While you're impersonating British people in the car?
That too. Does anyone understand what that means? I was telling Amber before the show. Just so everybody understands the context, that sometimes in my car, I listen to a lot of BBC World. It's a great Sirius satellite radio station. And well, you can get it other ways, but that's the way that I listen to it. And sometimes I'm just really bored, and so I listen to the British anchors, and I try to emulate them. I mine a bird, everything that they say, and listen to my British accent in my ears and see if I seem like I would fool anybody. And Amber, for whatever reason, thinks that's kind of weird. I don't know why. It seems normal to me.
I feel like we've become such good friends, even though we haven't spent much time together, that I haven't even asked you to do it on air, Sarah. So
well, there I would you never. Go. I would never.
Okay.
No,
good
no.
to know. See?
Absolutely.
I didn't
not.
Even ask.
Yeah, I could embarrass myself a million different ways, but I'm not ready for that yet. Okay, before I do, a quick reminder before we move on that we do record the Social Hour live 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Fridays. It's a lovely time to catch us. Maybe you're, you know, hanging out at work, your day is winding down, or depending on where you live, it might even be Saturday. Or really, really late on Friday. It's in any case, it's fun. You can hang out and chat with the other people and give us some real-time feedback. But of course, if you go to twit.tv/TSH, that is where all of our show archives live. That's where you can check in whenever you feel like it. Hey, there's a new episode. You want to watch the video? It's right in there on all of our episode pages. If you want to, the Little Bub episode, you guys got to watch that. I mean, if you don't watch any other archive, it's just... I don't know. It's one of the best days of my life. But we also have a variety of links that we talk about on each episode. Look, it's Bub. Oh, I could just do this all day. Look at Bub. She's just hanging out. Ah, adorable. I like his couch, too. It's very interesting. All right, but enough about him. That is twit.tv/TSH. And if you want to subscribe to the show, our subscription links are there too. If you say, I don't know what subscribing is all about, all it really means is that the show gets delivered to you via the way that you like to watch or listen to podcasts, and you don't have to think about it. So new episode gets delivered, and then you pick a time over the weekend that you want to catch up with us. All right, before we get into some of our social tips and our spotlight and some of your viewer feedback, want to take a moment to thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. At Shutterstock, you can find, almost an endless type of images and videos that you might need for a creative project. Let's say you want to put together, I don't know, some funny viral video. You're hoping to upload it to YouTube. You think it's just going to be awesome. But you need certain types of images or videos, or maybe for your website, or maybe like an advertisement or something like that. You can choose from over 1 million high quality stock video clips. Let's just stick with video clips for a second. 2D or 3D animation, motion graphics, variety of formats that you could put into this video. That's awesome. This is stuff that you don't have to worry about shooting yourself. Like, I don't know, hiring actors or finding animals or getting, you know, a shot of beautiful palm trees by the ocean somewhere that's really, really far away from where you live. I mean, a lot of this stuff just simply is not all that feasible. Shutterstock sources video clips from around the world, and then they're in your hands, and you can use them for your projects. A lot of contributors to Shutterstock are pros, absolutely beautiful stuff, and the team at Shutterstock reviews each video to make sure, this is up to the Shutterstock standard. So if you want to see, you know, the sun rising over the ocean, you know that video is going to be awesome. And they're adding a lot of video clips each week, about 10,000. So every time you visit, you're going to get a whole slew of cool videos that weren't there before that you go, oh, awesome. Now I've got inspiration. I've got all these beautiful sunset photos over the water. I'm going to I'm going to put together some Jack Handy quotes or something like that. You know what I mean. Sophisticated search tools as well. So whether or not you know exactly what you're looking for or you're just trying to get inspired via, you know, some sort of a color or an emotion, Shutterstock has all of that as well. And they've got shareable clip boxes. So maybe you're just one of a team of people who's working on a project. That happens frequently. You can save video assets to a clip box, and then your teammates can access them anytime and share with other members of your team so that, you know, you guys might be scattered around or somebody's traveling and, hey, just check out that clip box. And then they can give you a, you know, a heads up. I really like this image or video, or no, I'm looking for something else. It's a great way to collaborate. Shutterstock also has flexible pricing. You can choose between individual clips. Maybe there's just the one clip you're looking for, or maybe you want a video pack. Maybe there's quite a few videos that you will need. Shutterstock is also a global offering. They've got customer service with dedicated corporate reps all over the world. They have offices in more than a dozen countries. It's truly a global effort. And you can try it today by signing up for a free account. Ah, free is the magic word. No credit card needed. Just start an account. Start using Shutterstock to help build your next project. And once you decide to purchase a plan, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR7, and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. Shutterstock.com. And for 30% off new accounts, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR, all one word, and then the number 7. That is your code to get 30% off new accounts. That's a great, great deal. 30%, guys. And thanks to Shutterstock for their support of The Social Hour. All right, Amber. Right. I found this link a few days ago, and I thought it was great. This was actually shared with us by Ian on Twitter. He is IAG.me on Twitter. And it's just sort of a tongue-in-cheek article about how to become a social media guru in 20 steps. Now, when I first looked at the article, I was like, eye roll, oh boy, here we go again. This is going to be, you know, one of these, like, this is the easy way to become a maven. But I quickly realized that this is a very tongue-in-cheek version of what not to do. It's for hilarious. Example, yeah, these, I mean, and these are, we've covered a lot of this stuff in the past, Amber, like, you know, how to automate everything, because nobody cares if there's a real person behind your daily 10 a.m. tweet.
Yeah, it's too funny. And the list goes on. I like number 4, you are the center of the universe. So gurus and ninjas should make sure they do that. Number 5, numbers are everything. So a list with a little image of more than 41 million followers. And buying reputation, so buying Twitter followers, they of course recommend this. But it's fun. You know, and to be honest with you, even though it's totally tongue-in-cheek, I think for people wondering what not to do in social media, this is a great list, because all of these things can definitely do more damage at the end of the day to your reputation on social media sites.
Yeah, this is actually a great list of what not to do on social media, and really a good reminder too. You know, this list is, it's great. You know, the whole clout score is the guru score. I don't know anybody who actually feels that way, and I think it would be dangerous to feel that way, although there are some benefits to clout, and I'm not just going to trash it as completely useless, but it's the sort of the same thing as number 5. Numbers are everything. You know, if you have 41 million followers, then you are better than somebody with fewer than you. That just truly is not the case. These are not actual representations of anybody who is, you know, thumbs up in your life or your work. It's the quality, not quantity. And that's true as far as the eye can see, and in social networking, even more so. So this is, you know, we'll put the link in our show notes. It's a good read.
It is. It's a good little read. I think lots of good information in here. I also have to say that I love this. This is another little social tip here. And this is an article from Paid Content, which I think you found as well, Sarah, talking about Slate's cool tool for better Twitter headlines. And this happens to me all the time with Twitter headlines. As I go to a news article, I try to click on Twitter to tweet it, and the headline is too long. What's neat about this is it looks like Slate is using a tool where what happens is the headline is actually rewritten. So as far as I understand, the writer has gone in and created a headline for the main site, but also a Twitter headline. So it's more friendly to the 140-character environment.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, Innovations editor Catherine Goldstein over at Slate says that they've had 100% Twitter referral growth over the past year, and that's just one of the social strategy pushes that they've been working on. So the way that it works is if a writer writes an article on Slate, there's a CMS, there's a content management system that they have in place somewhere behind the scenes. Here's how we publish stuff. And they've added a little entry line so that you've got your article headline and then you've got a more appropriate Twitter headline. So an example was the headline was, "This is a terrible way to commemorate a major civil rights victory." Now, if you had something like that, that you saw on Twitter with a link, you might say, I don't know enough about what this is going to be about, so I'm not going to click. This happens to me all the time. This particular headline became, for Twitter, "The New Yorker's Bert and Ernie cover is a terrible way to commemorate a major civil rights victory." Aha! Suddenly, it's all put into context for me. I know at least the premise of what editorial slant on a piece of news I'm about to click into, and I can choose a little bit more of, yes, I have 10 minutes, this is what I want to do on my time, or no, this isn't really for me, I'm going to go ahead and skip it. Very important. And I find that's a real pet peeve of mine, Amber, on Twitter these days. And I hope I'm not guilty of it, because I hate it when other people do it, where there are too many links being shared and I don't know what's on the other side because people don't give me enough information. And it's not anyone's fault. I know we have 140 character limits, but the context is really important.
It is. Interestingly, in the bottom of this article on paid content, they mention at Slate that their Twitter referrals have grown 100% since they started doing this and other things in the social space. So it's had a lot of positive effects for them. I actually just went and tweeted the article just to see what the headline was. And you can see it is, in fact, Twitter friendly, and ask people to check out the article. So a smart idea. They also mentioned the New York Times and other publications will start doing this. And I think this is just going to be the norm, right? I mean, the Twitter exposure and distribution will become such an important part of success in the content world that you'll have to have Twitter-friendly headlines like this. It'll probably be a course in school one day, Sarah.
Exactly. And there's actually a comment debate on this paid content article about the Slate Twitter headlines, if you guys can follow that, of people saying, well, hold on, why aren't they all just the Twitter-friendly headlines then? You know, why is there an article headline that looks a certain way and reads a certain way that's not the same as whatever you're sending out on Twitter? Maybe the Twitter headline is just the way that headlines should be written in the future for SEO purposes. And I think that that's a really good point. I don't exactly know what the answer is. There's probably a little bit of a, this is how headlines are written legacy thing going on in journalism that might be difficult to evolve from without people accusing us all of just writing for SEO. But they do have a point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the difference is when I tweeted this link, it says, check out Slate's cool tool for better Twitter headlines. Obviously, they're not going to have that as the headline of the article because they're assuming that the person has already landed on that page. So right. I think what will happen with the Twitter headlines, it has to be more of a sales tool, a tease to get people there. And in the case that they're actually on the page with the headline, they're already there, maybe just want to see exactly what the post is about. So, you know, it's kind of a drag for editors out there to now have to write two headlines. But if they're going to be using language like checkout and those type of things, they're not going to work, obviously, in the main part of the headline.
And I think that this is a great tool for everybody to think about. I mean, if you're writing a blog post that's, I don't know, it you're really proud of it and it's called whatever it's called, think hard. Is this the best headline for Twitter that people want to click on to read this originating article, no matter where it comes from? I mean, if you're sharing a link and you want to engage as many people as possible, this is just a good exercise to go through. And yeah, it's a little bit more work, but it sounds like companies say it is worth it. And that is the ultimate goal, right? I mean, if you share something on Twitter, you want people to click.
Exactly. All right. So we have a couple of different emails here. But before that, Sarah, you have your Spotlight One feed for Chrome.
Yeah, I do. So this is Jason, I don't know if you can grab my computer screen, but this is a Chrome extension that was shared with us by, oh gosh, one of the creators of One Feed. I don't know. You sent us an email and I'm so sorry. I don't remember your name off the top of my head. But this, the whole idea is, this is just for Chrome. So I've actually been using Safari quite a bit these days, and I'm out of luck, but I switched over to Chrome for this. The idea is that I've got my social networks in one place, and it's also bringing in the latest news from a variety of publications. Right now, on my bottom three, I've got Business Insider, The Verge, and BuzzFeed. Okay, well, those are three publications that I read quite often. If I want to add something to my little home screen here, I just go ahead and click the plus button. You know, it brings up, like, you've been on eHarmony lately, or the Tech News Today email account, perhaps Instagram, but you can add anything you want, just the URL and the title, kind of like a bookmark. And at that point, you go ahead and say, all right, well, this is the stuff that I'm most interested in, or I can go ahead and search a variety of social networks. I don't know. I mean, Amber, I actually had a little bit of hard time with OneFeed. I installed it as a Chrome extension, and then I couldn't really figure out how to pull it up until I got some Chrome notifications, and then it sort of showed up in its new tab. So slightly confusing for me. But once it did, I thought, well, okay. So now this is my, oh, I see what's going on. So I just opened up yet another tab, and I can see now that what this does is this replaces my, if you open a new tab, what do you want the landing page to be? For me, my default is always nothing. I'll just type in whatever I'm going to type in, you know, into the search bar. So this replaces your new tab landing screen. So it's sort of a good shortcut to get to a variety of places that you go to often. I've got my, I've linked OneFeed to Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and Instagram off the bat. So I can see that I'm not going to click on these because they're emails, but I'm getting real-time information from a variety of places. I'm just not sure, Amber, that something like this is a great solution for me, because these social networks evolve so often that often tools like this to get everything in one place don't end up, they break after time, or they get abandoned, or maybe I've been burned too much in the past. I like the concept, though.
Yeah, it looks like a kind of neat concept, and I could see some people using it, but I'm kind of with you. I mean, I think what happens with different services like this is you use them for a bit, and then it's not doesn't really fit with your general habits in the internet space. But I could see people using this. Maybe it also is something you have to kind of use regularly, and you get more used to it over time.
You also, once you get into the, you know, I started on my little landing page here, my homepage. But if you go to the right, you get to your news reader. And this is a little bit more of, okay, well, here's a variety of news from a variety of sources. Or if I want to go ahead and switch over to my social feeds, here is stuff that's being shared with the accounts that I have linked to. Either I can see them all in one place, or I can say, no, I just want to look at new Instagram photos or new updates on Twitter. This is a little bit of kind of a tablet type experience. I mean, it reminds me a lot of how Flipboard works for me. If maybe you aren't really using tablet type apps or mobile type apps that sort of replicates the experience, that might actually work for you. If you've never done social networking kind of in that grid type of pattern, I don't know. People really like it. So
I feel like when it would work really well, and it reminds me a little bit of the Windows experience on tablets, is when you have that touch experience too, right?
Yeah.
With these different tiles, I feel like that's what that really lends itself to, a touchscreen experience. And that's where I think it could get more, even more useful. So we'll see with that one, Sarah. Now, this is a really cool site that we got from someone named Abdel, who says, I wanted to ping you about a little site I recently pushed out called VinstaVids. The premise is pretty straightforward. Watch popular Vine and Instagram videos. I thought you might enjoy this and get a laugh or two. Would love any input as well. I think I got it right, VinstaVids.
Yeah.
And this is fun. This is a great idea. I haven't seen anything like this.
No, it's, and, you know, at first I thought, well, I mean, there's Vine videos and there's Instagram videos, and neither of them, for the most part, are all that compelling to me. But I kind of like this approach more than I like them peppered into, particularly on Instagram, the still images that I'd sort of rather see. Vine is kind of one of these things where it's like, Vine, okay. And then Instagram videos, I click on every once in a while. But the most popular videos from both networks end up being kind of creative. And maybe I'm just in the mood to see some creativity Doesn't even need to be from my friends. It's just sort of popular stuff, trending stuff. And I kind of like this. It's really simple, but it's a place to watch short form videos like Cat PMS. Chasen, you have to click on Cat PMS. I've got to know what that's all about. This is on Vine. So yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's
Cat biting its owner.
I know how that goes. Right. And then, you know, you watch this on loop for 3 or 4 minutes and your day is better. Or you watch a really, really creative person.
Well, Sarah, that's our cat quota for the day because I was including a cat story later on, but we might have to cancel it. No, I'm just kidding. I'll keep it in there. Do you want to take the next email?
Yeah, sure. Next email is actually a question from a gentleman about Kickstarter. He says, I can't really remember hearing too much about Kickstarter in terms as a social network. I've never really thought about it until very recently when me and my daughter Amber, another Amber out there, launched one for her band. I have the Kickstarter app on my phone and I get notified when someone makes a pledge or a comment, and I get the same endorphin rush as I do when somebody comments on my Instagram photos. And it got me thinking, as a form of a social network, it is one, but instead of loves or hearts or likes, you get money. I'd love to hear your opinion about this idea and perhaps about the social halo that inevitably forms around a Kickstarter campaign as one tries to get the word out. What's a good strategy for success? Ooh, this is, I don't know. I think getting money is a different animal altogether than getting virtual praise. Because, the whole idea of Kickstarter is to raise money that is real money. This is not virtual stickers or that sort of thing towards a project that somebody really cares about. So I guess in a way it's a social network, Amber, but it's certainly a temporary one.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think as far as getting attention about something like this, you know, one of the most important social networks all of us have in our lives really is our email network. And that can be a great way to just promote something like this to try to raise money. I know I have good friends of mine, and when they write kind of the proper type of email that they're trying to raise money for a certain cause, I mean, that's where I'm inclined to want to be able to donate to that specific cause. So I think relying on email messages to people that are in your smaller social circle, that can be a great way to raise money for this. And of course, all the other social media tools. But none of this stuff, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like, Zach Braff and his quest for whatever it was. He got $3 million or maybe even more to make his next movie. But it takes time and a lot of energy, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Kickstarter is probably less of a social network than the really successful Kickstarter campaigns have used other networks in order to get the word out. And I mean, I know that there are probably a lot of people out there saying, well, I tried really, really hard with my Kickstarter campaign. I used every tool available to me and I didn't meet my goal. And that happens too. I think the formula is one part using social tools successfully to be able to get the word out over anything, whether you're trying to raise money or you're trying to have people look at your video or read your blog post, and the original content, in Kickstarter's case, a great idea for building a product or something like that, that people will want, and that sometimes those sorts of things get the word out on their own. Not effortlessly, but they take on their own momentum.
Yep. Definitely. So, Sarah, this next story involves a position for a cat meme director. And as soon as I read this, I thought of you. This was something that showed up in an advertisement in the UK at the University of Creative Arts. And looks like on their website, they had this posting. You would make £10 an hour. And in fact, the title was Director of Cat Meme Creation. And the posting is quite hilarious. It goes on to describe what you would do if you were this person. You obviously have to love cats, create memes, and many other different things. Now, the funny thing is, it turns out that this was just a mistake that someone had put up on their site. The article really isn't that well written, so it's hard to figure out who exactly did this. But I thought you would enjoy this, Sarah.
Well, I would enjoy it a lot more if there really was a job out there for a cat meme director, because I'd be perfect for it. But yeah, this is one of these too good to be true type of situations. It's too bad. It's too bad that so many people got their hopes up about something that was like, I'm sure the originator was like, wait, no, it's not a job. No, sorry. This is not actually.
Just someone having
something that
some
we
fun,
want
right?
resumes for.
Exactly.
Although more and more, I'm starting to feel like there are possibly niche market, I know, but needs for people like this. For example, did you know that Lil Bub and Grumpy Cat, well, I don't know about Lil Bub. Lil Bub may not have an agent. I'll have to talk to her dad about that. But Grumpy Cat and a variety of other internet famous cats have the same agent. It's like a internet cat agent. It's a real man.
Oh,
I don't know his name off the top of my head, who is, you know, helping them secure speaking engagements and books.
Wait, speaking engagements? That's going to be awkward.
Yeah, I know, but it's a thing. Yeah, so, I mean, this is, it's more and more there are going to be jobs that have to fill the needs of people like us who want more of the things that they like on the internet, and there's always money to be made behind the scenes. So perhaps the cat meme director job in this case was not real, but is real in the not too distant future.
I'd like to see the applications for it, I will say, just to see the creativity that people came up with. And, you know, it's funny because the college mentioned right away that this was a mistake and they were embarrassed about what had happened. But I would have loved to have seen them take this and spin it off into kind of a fun and positive thing and talk about some of the applicants and get more attention for it. Because I think that's a perfect situation where you can kind of twist things and maybe get some publicity in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. All right, moving on. Want to remind everybody, well, first want to thank everybody who contributes to our show each week. You email us, you tweet at Amber and I, you leave us voicemails. Sometimes you send us videos that we can roll into a show. We love all that stuff. So just a reminder of how you can get a hold of us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. Don't include your number if you leave us a message because then we can't play the voicemail. It's an issue I have across all of my shows on Twit is everybody wants us to call them back and they leave us the number and then I go, now I can't use this. Or you can record a video, upload it somewhere, send us the link and we will be happy to include it in a future show. We still have Amber's Router Fad. That's always my favorite part of the show. But before we get to that, let's thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Social Media Solutions from SAP helps companies use social media to improve their customer service and their support processes. That sounds perfect, right? Everybody wants to do this. We're all aware that this is one of the most important things that companies do as an outward-facing entity on social media. You have to interact with your customers. You have to make sure that they're happy. If they're not, you have to keep on top of that. Well, if you're working at an enterprise, a company really of any length, any size rather, you know that that can be a challenge. The more information coming in, the harder it is to stay on top of it. So there's a listening component of social media solutions. Searches the web in a smart way to know what's being said about your brand. Captures reports on conversations about relevant terms. People's passion level, you know, are they just upset or are they really, really excited? Could they help you evangelize your product? Patterns, competitors, you might just really want to know what people are saying about that other company that does what you do and figure out who's doing it better. It helps you build better products that way because you can incorporate real-time customer feedback into that next meeting where you come to the table and tell your team what direction you should be going in with your next product. Then there's also the engaging component, and that's where you spring to action. You've got all this data. Okay, people are saying all sorts of stuff on Facebook, on Twitter, maybe on a review site, on their personal blog. You've got all of that information, and then you improve your customer service and support because then you can set rules about all of these messages coming in and who deals with what. Activity on the social media stream can lead to direct and customer engagement because you can drive sales to your products. You can quickly solve customer problems. You can respond to customer feedback. You just stay on top of everything. You know, you keep your sanity. My goodness. And if somebody tweets a technical support problem, well, you know the team member who can deal with that. Those questions get routed to that team member. And it feels a lot more effortless than getting buried in feedback. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing by improving the customer service and support experience. So go to sap.com/twit right now. Take a guided tour. You're looking at part of it here on our video feed, and it's a good one. It tells you a lot more than what I have time for now. Take a guided tour to see for yourself how SAP and their social media solutions can work for you and your company. And we thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of the Social Hour. All right, Amber, it is time. It is time for Rad or Fad.
Okay, so our Rad or Fad this week is something that I just stumbled across today on TechCrunch. It had mentioned that celebrity Tyra Banks had invested in it, and the service is called The Hunt. The idea behind The Hunt is it's a place where you can go, and let's say you saw a t-shirt that someone was wearing, or you found something, you took a picture of it, and you wanted to be able to find it to buy it online. There's a community of people who are members of The Hunt who will help you find that particular thing. Interestingly, unlike other sites out there that allow you to just kind of browse like Pinterest and other places, what's great about this, I think, is the community element of it, in the sense that, you know, if you put something up there, there are going to be people that are going to help you with your search. And in fact, I think they said their success rate in the TechCrunch article was about 75% as far as finding things that are exactly like or at least similar to some of the items added.
I don't know. Does that make sense? I like it.
I like it too.
I like it. Yeah.
It's different, right?
It is.
Well, you're very social.
Yeah, it's cat earring I saw. Sorry. this is great. Because this is sort of one of those, it's like a Google search or a query. Mm-hmm. But it's tied to e-commerce.
Yeah.
You know, where
exactly.
You're like, "What? Wait, where was that thing? Or can I get something that relates to that one thing that I saw in context on pop culture somewhere?" I like this.
Yeah, or if you saw something in a magazine, you know, you're sitting somewhere reading a magazine and you took a picture, and maybe you're planning a wedding or you have a party to go to and you see a dress that you like on someone or somewhere, then just knowing that you can add it to this and people will help you find it, and then you can potentially be able to buy it from here. I think it's brilliant. I think it's a great concept, and I think it takes the idea of kind of a social community shopping experience really to the next level, where it is like a scavenger hunt in some ways, and everybody loves it.
It's very cool. This is great.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. It's some of the stuff I just really like too.
I know.
So there's
that's
that too.
Yes.
The Hunt,
there is that too.
At thehunt.com, which is, I have to say, unless thehunt.com has been around for a long time and we're just now finding it, that's a great URL in this day and age, isn't it?
It is a great URL, and you're right. Lots of fun stuff on there, and seems like a pretty interesting community. I feel like Ashton Kutcher may have also invested. There was a couple of celebrities, but it seems like this one kind of has legs. So I agree. It's definitely rad.
It's rad. The Hunt. TheHunt.com.
The Hunt is rad.
It is a solid rad. 2 weeks in a row now, Amber and I have been rad across the board. Emphatic rads. I just like
it's
that
amazing.
Word. I like to use it as much as possible. Well, Amber, let's end this on a high note. We've come to the end of our hour. It's been a great hour, chock full of all sorts of news and some social media tips and some spotlights, and we got some feedback, and of course, a great Rad or Fad with The Hunt. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Remember, we're live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. You can find us all over the web between shows during the week. And until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.